भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
संसार सागरे मग्नं दीनमहं करुणानिधे कर्मग्राहगृहीताङ्गं माम् उद्धरवार्णव श्रीमद्भागवताख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्षकृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफला सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशव भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नादस्वं नो यत प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वपापप्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःखशमनं तं नमामि हरिं परं जन्माद्यस्य यतोऽन्वया इतरदर्थेष्वभिज्ञस्वरा तेने ब्रह्महृदाय आदिकवये मुह्यन्ति यत्सूरयम् तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तमुपगं सत्यं परं धीमहि धर्मप्रोज्जितकैरवोत्रपरमो मत्सराणां सदां वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तावत्त्रयोन्मूलनं श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किम्बाबरैरीश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुध्यदेत्र कृतुभि शुश्रूषुभिः तत्क्षणात् निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुपातमृतद्रवसंयुतं पिबदभागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रयविनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयं नमः यं प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुभेदमभेदकृत्यं द्वैवायनो विरहकादरमजुहाव पुत्रेदि तन्मयदयत्तरवोऽभिनेतु तं सर्वभूतहृदयं मुनिन्नानतोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अतिदिदीर्षदां तमन्धं संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यं तं व्यासूनुम् उपयामि गुरुं मुनीनाम् नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृदाननेन्दोः मम वाचि विजृम्भतां मुरारेर्मधुरीं न कणिकापि कापि कापि नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणे श्रीमल् गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नमः वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणां पादरेणुमभीष्टश यासां हरिगतोद्गीतं पुरादिभुवनत्रयं गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरं करविराजितचक्रशङ्खं कौमोदगी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधासहायमतिसुन्दरमन्दहासं वादालये शमनिशं हृदि भावयामि कोमलं पूजयन् वेणुं श्यामलोयं कुमारगा वेदवेद्यवरं ब्रह्म भासदां पुरतो मम मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयति गिरिं यल्कृपादमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीकृष्णाय नमः श्रीराधयाय सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनं गोविन्द गोविन्द Last Sunday, we saw how Mimamsaka's position on in from Purva Mimamsa, which was spoken by which has come from the Jaimini tradition, how Krishna has refuted that through various poems. That's what we were discussing last Sunday. So there Krishna mentioned three things. First thing is what we saw in the earlier phase of the 10th chapter, where Krishna says that person who is seeking the truth, he should search after the truth by by taking instructions from a spiritual master and intensely seeking for self-realization, giving up all other attachments to work and attachments to the material world, material life. Krishna talked about that in the first few verses that we saw that. And Krishna's point was that that karmam, which is karmam creates the bondage. And therefore, at a certain stage in life, one should come out of karmam. Krishna says that also, that he was saying that, as we saw before, that jityasayam sampravarte nadriyat karma chodanam, that at what stage karmam one should give up and one should free oneself from karmam. When jityasa comes, jityasa means Brahma jityasa. Brahma jityasa means intense desire for liberation from material life. Having spoken about that in detail, afterwards Krishna talked about Mimamsakas. Mimamsakas philosophy, which is also coming from the Vedas, Karmakandam, how they executed Karmakandam to go to heavenly planets to live comfortably and come back here and execute yagam or sacrifices again and continue to live in a happy state. So that is the goal of Mimamsakas, which Krishna has again rejected. Afterwards, Krishna talked about a third group of people who neither follow the Vedas nor they have any desire for self-realization, to which category most of us belong to. And therefore, Krishna said there that the adeshan karmakartranam boktanam sukhayokhayoho nanatumana nityatim logakalagamalmanam. Then Krishna talked about these people, whether they have even after karmani dukkodarkani, Krishna says karmani dukkodarkani, karmam only creates dukkham. We don't understand karmam, the after effects or consequences of karmam. Karmam's powerful karmam, how that binds us to this world and how it puts us down in the lower species of life. These things Krishna has spoken about. Karmani dukkodarkani kurvan dehena deipuna deham avajade tatram kim sukham martya dharmina. That was Krishna's point. Kim sukham martya dharmina. What is this human race looking for happiness by executing karmam? Krishna is asking us this question. That kim sukham martya dharmina. What happiness will they get out of this karmani dukkodarkani, which is only creating more and more bondage for themselves in this world? This is Krishna's questions towards us. Karmani dukkodarkani kurvan dehena deipuna deham abhajade tatra kim sukham martya dharmina. This so that is the verse number 29, that again and again, which creates distress. And these Krishna is talking about general classes of people who are completely absorbed in karma. Karma means simple materialistic way of life and executing materialistic way of life, and from that the results of that karma, which will bind them more and more to this material world. And they are executing that, they die, they accept another body, or they go down in the to the lower species or to the hellish world. Loganam. Then after that, Krishna is going to talk about something very, very serious things now. From now on, you will find another five verses till Uddhava asks the question again. They are very, very important verses. It is in these verses Krishna is going opening up some of our misunderstanding on spiritual life. A lot of people in this world have this false understanding. God, we have to be fearful about. We have to be fearful about God. That is how we are trained to think, isn't it? Many people think that, oh, you're God-fearing, they say, isn't it? God-fearing. And similarly, people are trained to think that there is somebody up there looking at us all the time, watching you, what you are doing and what you are not doing properly. So Krishna says, who has to be frightened in that way? It's a kind of fear that has been built up. Krishna says, you don't need to be frightened about me. That's Krishna's point. If you are frightened about me, how can there be any loving relationship between us if you are always frightened of me? That's Krishna's point. So Krishna will say, Yavalsyal Gunavaishamyam, Krishna says there, that the Yavalsyal Gunavaishamyam Tavan Nanamattam Almana, these two important verses, 32 and 33. In this chapter, we will go back and forth many times, verses, because of the way they are connected. Yavalsyal Gunavaishamyam Tavan Nanatvam Almana, Nanatvam Almano Yaval Paradandram Tadevahi, Krishna says. And then he says, Yavadasyal Asudandatram Tavad Ishwarado Bhayam, 33. Yavalsyal Gunavaishamyam, when does this Nanatvam or variegatedness happens in the creation? How we, when we fall from our spiritual position? Lot of things will come like that. Then he says, Yavadasyal Asudandatram Tavad Ishwarado Bhayam. You have to be frightened of me, Krishna says, when you have this situation in yourself. It's not Krishna's fault, it is our fault. Yavat Swal Asudandratram Tavad Ishwarado Bhayam. You have to be frightened about Ishwara, Krishna, all the time. Edal Samuvasiram Ste Muhyandi Shujarpiraha. Krishna is saying there that how fear comes to a living entity. And that fear develops in a person in such a way that throughout life he lives in this world frightened of God. Frightened of God. As far as Krishna is concerned, there is no need for that, to be frightened of God. That's a very strange situation. Many people people present this way, God consciousness to others. Look, if you don't do this, he'll get upset with you and he's going to punish you when you go to hellish planets. Krishna says, why do you have to think like that? Because that thoughts have come. Why? Because we have misunderstood everything. That is where this has come from. This misunderstanding in us, Krishna is correcting us in that two verses. We'll come to that later. But prior to that, there's something more Krishna has to say. Loganam Logabalanam, verse number 30. Loganam Logabalanam Madbhayam Kalpajivinam Brahmano Vibhayam Marto Divarardha Parayushaha. Krishna is saying, Loganam Logabalanam Madbhayam Kalpajivinam. All those who are maintainers of this creation, including Lord Brahma, he has got fear in them. Brahmano Vibhayam Marto Divarardha Parayusha. Why is that? Because they are all subjected to what is known as Kalam. Kalam is that thing that is causing this problem. And Krishna will talk about in verse 34 about that. Kalam Alpam Agamam Logam Sobhavam Dharmam Idimam Bahuda Prahur Gunavidigare Sadi. This whole chapter is very deep subject. It is a lot of things to be spoken about these things, because Krishna is presenting something to us to think through it a lot to think through. And if you keep absorbing this inside, you will notice that Krishna is not someone to be frightened of. If we follow him, we don't have to be frightened of him. But if we don't follow him and take our own mind into decision making, then there will be problems. That also Krishna wants there. So you see here mentioned about Kalam Alma, verse 34. Kalam, Almam, Agamam, Logam, Sobhavam, Dharmam. So many things. Isn't it? Kalam, Almam, Agamam, Logam, Sobhavam, Dharmam. So all these things are Krishna's what is known as vibhutis, or kind of features coming from Krishna. So let's look at this one, each other. Krishna has many features. Krishna has many features. And many of them, all of them originate from Krishna. All of them originate from Krishna. Now, Kalam or time, we call it as time, isn't it? Kalam, generally we refer it as time. But it's not time. It's not time. Time is the only equivalent English word for that. Kalam is something different than that. What we'll explain what Kalam is actually. So kalam is one of Krishna's feature. I'll use the word kalam itself because that's the precise word. Kalam is one of Krishna's features. One of Krishna's features. Similarly, the three modes of material nature is one of Krishna's features. Three modes of material nature is one of Krishna's features. Similarly, the what is known as the material creation is one of Krishna's features. This is all coming from Krishna. And when do they come? Whenever Krishna, original Krishna's position is like this. Krishna is pure. Pure means eternal, pure, fully liberated and free, untouched by the modes of nature, anything completely free. And Buddham, fully conscious, and that state of consciousness is Krishna. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. That is how in the Bhagavatam it is explained. Later you will see that. So in there, when there is imbalance happens, or in other words, Guna Vaishamyam they call it. When there is imbalance in there, different features comes out from that. And that is how Kalam comes first. This part of Bhagavatam, you have to be very concentrating on this. Only then you will understand what Krishna is saying. So many, many things here is very much coming from the Upanishads. And therefore it's very confidential also in the way it is explained. So Kalam, Logam, religious principle, Dharmam, modes of material nature, three modes of nature, Maya, these are all Krishna's what is known as Kala means it is a feature of Krishna. Different features of Krishna. We are thinking Krishna when he stands there in the temple room smiling beautifully. Oh, he is such a nice person. Nice to go and see him. There is another side of Krishna in the Bhagavatam. When you read that, only you will appreciate what Krishna is. So here, Krishna is explained in this way. These different features are coming from Krishna. And in addition to that, the Jiva also a living entity. This is one of Krishna's vibhuti. Vibhuti means it's an opulence of Krishna. From Krishna we have come out in this living condition. The Jiva which is inside us is also one of Krishna's vibhutis. All of us are somewhere related with Krishna in one form or the other. Now out of all these things, we are now told to discuss about Kalam, time. The English word is time for that, Kalam. Kalam kalayadamaham, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you look into the opulences of the absolute chapter, you will find there, Kalam kalayadamaham. Kalam is one of my kala, Krishna says there. One of my kala is Kalam, Krishna says. So, what is this Kalam? It's not the time what we are talking about with the watch we measure, minutes, seconds, hour and all that. That kind of measurement is already there. In the third canto you can see, they will talk about Renu, Trasarenu, Tudi, and that kind of measurement, it goes right up to, then there is called, goes up to Yugam, right up to Brahma's time. From the smallest amount of time to the largest amount of time is discussed in the Bhagavatam. That is time. But this Kalam Krishna is referring to is like this. That Kalam, Kalam or the time what we are referring here as, we have in the earthly planet, we refer with respect to the sun, isn't it? We measure the time with respect to the sun. Therefore, we are able to give some measurement to it. We are able to measure it in the form of hours, minutes, seconds and all that. But once you leave the earthly planet, go to the sun planet, where there is no sunrise or sunset, you cannot measure anything. What is in there? The Kalam finishes there. There is no time, you cannot measure any more time there, isn't it? Of course you can take your watch there to the sun planet and keep measuring there, but it doesn't mean anything, does it? It doesn't mean anything. So, what Krishna is saying here, that the sun planet exists and earth planet is rotating around the sun. Accordingly we get day and night, and on that basis we calculate all this time in this world. And based on the time, we plan different things and we use it as a measuring process for our transactions in this world. Krishna is concerned, time finishes there, it has no more value after that. Why? Once you go to the sun planet, or once you go to a liberated soul, a person who is liberated from material life, he doesn't have time either. He doesn't have time either. Because for him, time doesn't mean anything to him. He is not bound by time, in other words. We are bound by time. Why? We are situated within the body. While we are within the body, all these kind of things will have problem for us. It causes difficulties for us. So Krishna is saying here that exactly like you come to a stage where there is no day and night, and that is my nature. Krishna's nature is a situation where there is no day and night. In other words, these changes doesn't happen in Krishna. We are talking about Krishna's these different features now. So in those features, Krishna's no changes happening. It's always stable and steady. It doesn't change at all. That's an important point Krishna is making here, because once you are liberated state, you will feel exactly the same situation. The mind is not wavering. There's no such thing called mind anymore to cause these problems. It's all coming from the mind. For example, to a liberated person once, somebody asked, when is Ekadashi? He asked him, when is Ekadashi? His reply was, I don't even know when day and when night is, he said. And you are asking me about Ekadashi, when it is. You can understand his point also, isn't it? That Ekadashi and all that, now we are calculating Ekadashi in India, and then astrologers are calculating for the West what time it is, and some America it is some other time. We are calculating all these things on understanding that this is today's Ekadashi. We get frightened about that also. So we have to make some adjustments in life. But in liberated state, these considerations go, because this kind of things do not affect him anymore. It does not affect that person anymore, because his mind has gone. And only because of the mind in us that all these things exist. All these things are existing. It's due to the presence of the mind. Krishna is saying here that to understand this, you have to go back to Bhagavad Gita a little bit more. There's so many things in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, backwards and forwards. Krishna talks about this, that the time begins in us only when the mind comes up. Only when the mind comes. It's the mind that allows us to measure the time. Suppose there was no mind, will you be disturbed by the things what's going on? No, you won't be disturbed. You won't be feeling any appointment to be getting you somewhere on time. Because you have gone beyond the body. In the body, while living within this body, we will be always concerned about everything related to the body, and we have to act in this world based on those conditions. Based on those conditions, we have to act in this world. Just like this, we don't have to explain. Everybody knows about it, isn't it? When we are living in the body, all the rules of this world apply to you. So therefore, we cannot understand in the liberated state what it is like. We only understand in the conditioned state how things run. But in the liberated state, Krishna is saying there that the mind is not functioning anymore. This because the mind is steady. It is not. What is mind? Mind is nothing but a continuous flow of thoughts that has stopped. That has permanently stopped. And because it has stopped, there is no more controlling force from inside to tell you, I have this appointment or that appointment to go. This fear of existing in this material body has created this situation in us. Therefore, Krishna is talking to us, we will discuss it a little later more, that this fear all the time inside that, oh, if I not kept that appointment, what will happen? I have not gone, I have not done this at this time, what will happen? You can say all these things to me, we will say like that, isn't it? If we talk about these things to somebody, they'll say, oh, that's all right. But in the real world, they'll say, oh, you have to follow all these things, isn't it? This will be their answer. But Krishna's point is this, that this has come, Krishna is going a little deeper into this subject to make us understand something much more subtle, very, very subtle in these things, that this thing called time you have created, I have not created, you have created for your managing affairs in this world. That's fine. But when you come to the realized state, this position changes. This situation changes altogether. No night, no day, liberated state, that is it. That is it. No night, no day. No fear of this time. No fear of time goes away from him at that point. Kalam kalayatamaham. Krishna is saying there, for all conditioned souls, I am present in right in front of them in the form of kalam or in the form of time. Then you can see this also in practical life. As soon as you go into deep sleep, is there time? Do you look at the watch in deep sleep and say, I've slept so many hours? Or you don't think anything about it. Time is finished at that point. Similarly, when you put children to sleep, if you notice, say they slept at 9 o'clock in the evening, and if you wake them up at 6 o'clock in the morning, if they are very tired, they'll say, I've gone to sleep only now a few minutes ago, why are you waking me up now? They'll say like that, won't they? Sometimes they do. Why? They have no concept of time. They take it like this. That I only slept for a short time, why you are waking me up, they'll say. They may have slept for 9 hours, but still they'll say, why you are waking me up? Because there's no concept of time in them at that time. So you have to think about time in this way. The time is something we have created for our own transactions in this world, with which we maintain this material life going on in respect to the body. So, but when you come to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will say, in the Shastram, how it is spoken is like this. The mind is a continuous flow of thought, isn't it? Continuous flow of thought. So each thought is succeeded by another thought. It's not one thought all the time. This continuous flow of different thoughts. Sometimes your eyes capture attention of something, you start thinking about it. Meanwhile you heard some sound, it goes in that direction. Or some smell came, you came and look into that direction. So different things is coming inward. According to the vasanas inside, the thoughts can keep changing all the time. This is called chittavritti. Chittavritti, when this thought is intercepted, when it is broken in between, then time comes. When the different thoughts are intercepted, that is when time comes. Suppose there is only one thought all the way through, you won't experience these differences. The chittavritti, when it is intercepted, that is when, that. Therefore the word in Shastram for the time is, in another one mentioned is, Ghanda Samvit. Ghanda Samvit they call it, because it breaks the thought process. It breaks the thought process. Then, so basically we have to understand that once the mind is dissolved, then there is no more time after that. Once the mind is dissolved, there is no more time. Till then there is time. All these watches and Swiss watches and all the complicated watches, we need it till then. After that we don't need those things. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, if you look, you will find there, Krishna talks about two kinds of prakriti. Two kinds of prakriti. What is it? One is called para-prakriti and the other one is called avara-prakriti. Isn't it? Two kinds of prakriti Krishna talks about. Nature. So, in the para-prakriti is the superior and avara-prakriti is the inferior. How Krishna says that? Krishna says, Bhumi apanalo vayu kham mano buddhi evaja ahangare idiyame bhinna prakriti ashtatha. That means, 5 material elements, mind, intelligence and false ego, 8. 5 plus 3, 8. These 8 things constitutes the apara prakriti. Krishna says these 8 things constitutes the apara prakriti or the inferior nature of the material nature. Then, apareyam idastvanyam prakritim vidhime param jivabhudam mahabaho yeyadam dharire jagat. Superior to this Aparaprakriti, there is what is known as Paraprakriti. So, Paraprakriti, Aparayamidasunam, Prakritim Vidhime Param. Krishna says Krishna Paraprakriti. And Jiva Bhudam, the living entities, belong to that Prakriti. Which one? This superior Prakriti. Jiva Bhudam Mahabaho Yeyadam Dharide Jagat. You will see in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, these two verses next to each other. So, this Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti is mixed up together. And we are a product of that. We are a mixture of this para-prakriti and avara-prakriti. Para-prakriti is the jiva, us, the soul, mixed up with the avara-prakriti. That's why we are existing the way we are today. Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti. It is mixed up completely. Then, so this Paraprakriti Jiva, it comes out now and then from us in different ways, in different forms. We are not conscious of it because of our closer association with Aparaprakriti. Paraprakriti Jiva is always coming out from us. But because of our association with Aparaprakriti, the inferior nature, we are not aware of that. In the example is given like this. A father goes to a mother, goes to school, and the children at the school are singing a song, some song they are singing. At that time, the father and mother will recognize the sound of their child among them. Say 100 children are reciting something, a song or singing a song, for example. When they hear, they will probably recognize the sound of their particular child or their child who is singing from there. Similarly, now and then this Paraprakriti comes out from us in some form and which we are not conscious of. Between each chittavritti, each thought, this jiva comes out. Narada Maharshi explained that to Prahlada earlier. I mentioned this before. It is in the seventh canto. You can take it and find it there. Sri Narada Maharshi says to Prahlada, when jiva comes out, between each thought, the soul comes out and shows its head and goes away. We are not conscious of all these things. That's why it is spoken very explicitly like that in that place. So, once we have tasted Paraprakriti, what this Paraprakriti is. So, both Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti is unknown to us. We don't know any of these things. We are completely ignorant, thinking that we are this body and we are living comfortably in this world. But when we understand that there is this Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti and their effect, then we have to make sure we don't fall into Aparaprakriti. That is our duty. If you fall into Aparaprakriti too much, what that means? It means that the five material elements, mind, intelligence and false ego, you are trapped in that. That's what is Aparaprakriti means. You are trapped in that. You see, the way they discuss these things is, in the four yugam, say Kriyugam, Trayayugam, Dwabarayugam, Kaliyugam, four yugas, how our absorption in the material nature is spoken. In the Krita Yugam, by the time you count three, one, two, three, by then your mind will go back to your own nature, your own identity, in other words, towards the soul. The thought will not, your mind will not go external, in other words, it will go internal. When it came down to Trita Yugam, it became, you have to count five, before that it goes back again, to start thinking about yourself. Self means about the soul. Similarly, by the time it came to Dwapara Yugam, it became seven, that you have to count seven. And in Kali Yugam, they say, even after counting eight, still the thought may not go back inwards. To such an extent, we have become external in our mind. We have gone away from the soul, from our spiritual identity, and became so absorbed in the external world to such an extent that it takes our five material elements, our five material elements and the three subtle elements, mind, intelligence and false ego. And if you have to say count up to eight, still you are not going back. You are a hardcore materialist. That's what it means. Even after counting up to eight, and if all the five material elements, including mind, intelligence and false ego, is still taking us outwardly, it means we are a hardcore materialist. That's what it means. Yeah, that means there is no internal understanding, there is no realization inside of the soul, so far away, disconnected from the truth. So far away, disconnected from the truth. This is how the Shastrams say about that. That we are far, far away from the truth. Therefore, it is spoken like that. Then, now, often what will happen is that the soul, how does it come out? It comes through the senses outwardly. And here and there experiences a little pleasure and it goes back. That's why I was mentioning this example, that our taste for this world, external world, in different objects. For example, I mentioned about the car. If you buy a car, a new car, and then you feel a possession of it, and the happiness that you get from that, then it is because of the jiva coming out from there at that point and giving a taste of that. But unfortunately, what we misunderstand at that time is that instead of realizing that it is the soul that is rejoicing in this, we take the pleasure in seeing the car, and our false ego takes the pleasure from that and enjoys. Although false ego has nothing, that is why it's called a false ego. It takes the pleasure from that object. So, strictly speaking, the pleasure is not coming from false ego, not from the object. It's coming from the soul. The soul goes back. Now, if this was not happening, suppose if this didn't happen, we would have all committed suicide by now. This is the important point. Because it is only because soul is giving pleasure now and then in some form like this through different objects at some time that we are finding some enjoyment in this world. Otherwise, there will be no enjoyment here. The way we are enjoying this world, we are thinking that, oh, I've acquired so much property, possessions, wealth, stocks, shares, this, that, and everything. And you are feeling happiness in all these things, many people, isn't it? That is our level of material happiness in this world. What else is this material happiness called? Material happiness means all these things, isn't it? So, this material happiness, what we are experiencing, we are thinking it is in the stocks and shares and bank balance and the properties and assets and whatever we have created. Krishna is saying, no, you're not getting any happiness from any of these things. Only because in between the soul is coming and giving you a taste of all these things. And you are mistakenly thinking that all these things are making you happy, or you are in relationship with that, your false ego is getting unnecessarily absorbed in that. Neither the false ego nor the objects can give you happiness. It is the jiva. Jiva's nature is like that. Individual soul. When we say jiva, the individual soul. The individual soul comes out in between and takes some pleasure in all these things and it goes back. So that's why it is said like this, our joy gets diluted. We won't completely lose it. Because if we completely lose it, we'll commit, as I said, we'll give up this body. Because if there is no happiness, what's the point in living like this in this world? There is some happiness in something, isn't it? That's why we keep on hammering here. Otherwise, we would have left it. So this this experience, Krishna is saying here, that anything in this world, anything, if we can take it, is all panchabhudatmakam and panchendriyam. Panchabhudatmakam means it's all coming from the five material elements. And panchendriyam means five senses of knowledge and five senses of action. So, when you are experiencing some nice food, say some nice food you are experiencing, at that time what's happening? That the tongue is experiencing that. And when the tongue is experiencing, the soul is coming out and giving you some experience of that and it goes back. So immediately you recognize, oh, the food is nice. Similarly, when you see with the eyes something, the experience is coming from the soul, not from the object. So what, when in all these situations, when we say that the happiness is coming not coming from the object, what it means is the mind which is experiencing that happiness, it's the mind that is experiencing it, mind touches it, goes to the soul and touches it when it sees the object, and then it experiences the happiness. So, in other words, the soul energizes the mind at that point to experience that happiness in whichever form to any of these five senses comes to us. This is the important point. So, this is the reason why when we acquire something new, after a few days it goes away, isn't it? It doesn't last very long, whether it's a house or a car or any other material happiness. It doesn't last very long, does it? It lasts for a few days, maybe a month. Maybe if you're completely bored, you'll start thinking about it and get some more pleasure out of it. But otherwise, it's not something permanent. This is important point because this nature of the material happiness Krishna is analyzing here. That mind is giving you this pleasure because it goes and touches the soul after when it comes in contact with the sense objects. and you feel the pleasure, a temporary moment of pleasure, but it goes away afterwards. It doesn't last very long. So now, when we coming to this, Krishna is saying here that when it goes outside like this all the time, when the mind goes outside and falls into the hands of apara prakriti, the material nature, there will never be any happiness. There will never be any proper happiness inside. Proper happiness cannot come from that. That once it gives up this apara prakriti and goes towards para prakriti, it will find peace, shanti. Shanti will come from that. In the 7th chapter you can read that apareyam idastvanyam prakritim vidhime param jivabhutam mahabaho edam dharide jagat. That this jagat, material world, what we are experiencing is different for everybody, isn't it? Everyone is experiencing this world in different way. Why? Because everyone's mind is different. That's why. That the about the same place, two people have two different opinions. About different activities in this world, people have different opinion. Why? Because everyone's mind is different. Now, Krishna says here that if it turns inwards, Krishna has got two forms. I was mentioning this before. One is the soul and the other one is the time. Or one is the time. One is the soul and the other one is time. When it goes inwards, when our mind goes inwards, it faces the soul, Krishna inside. When it goes outwards, it faces Krishna there in the form of kalam. It faces kalam outside. Outside when it goes, when the mind goes outside. So, Parikshit Maharaj, if you come to Bhagavatam, this is where it's interesting. In Parikshit Maharaj asked a question to Sudeva Goswami about this. If you have read Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there. In the 10th canto, in the first chapter, verse number is 7, 7th verse. What was Parikshit's answer? Viryani tasya akhila deha bhajam andarbahi purusha kala rupehi prayachado mrutti mrutamrutam ja maya manushyasya vada svavidvan. This is the verse. Beautiful verse. Viryani tasya akhila deha bhajam andarbahi purusha kala rupehi. That Parikshit is asking to Sudeva Goswami, that andar bahi purusha kala rupe, inside he is present as Krishna, is present as purusha inside, and outside he is present in the form of kalam. In the Bhagavatam you can see this. In the 10th canto begins like this: viryani tasya gila deha bhajam andar bahi purusha kala rupehi. That deha bhaja means all of us who have taken the material body, all of us, how do we experience Krishna in this world? In two ways. Andar bahi purusha kala rupehi. Andar, inside, we see him as Krishna. Purusha kala rupehi. Outside, he is seeing as kalam. That's what Parikshit says. Parikshit has got the point at that time. So he wants to know from Sudeva Goswami, saying, priyachado mrutyu mrutamrutam cha maya manushyasya vada svavidvan. Maya manushyasya vada svavidvan. Who is maya manushya? Is Krishna. Krishna has come and taken a position inside us. Krishna has stayed outside in the form of kalam. And he is playing with us like this all the time. We are not able to locate him either inside or outside. This is our position. Maya manushyasya vadasya vidvan. Beautiful words. That he says here, that how he is playing with Maya and with us. He comes inside and sits inside us as the super soul Paramatma. And outside in the form of kalam, we don't recognize either inside or outside. And what happens? Prayachado mrutyu mrutamrutam cha. And in process of that, mrutyu comes. Death comes and takes away everything. And that's where we are. Prayachado mrutyu mrutamrutam cha. Maya manushyasya vada svavidvan. And we cannot understand where to look for Krishna. We'll go and see somewhere, where is Krishna? We are inquiring. So, Parikshit's questions are very, very subtle questions too. Sometimes Parikshit asks such questions to Sudeva Goswami. That, viryani tasya gila deha bhajam andar bahi purusha kala rupehi പ്രയച്ഛതോ മൃത്യുമൃത അമൃതം ച മായാമനുഷ്യസ്യ വദസ്വവിദ്വൻ. ദാറ്റ് മായാമനുഷ്യൻ, ദാറ്റ് കൃഷ്ണ മായാമനുഷ്യൻ, കൃഷ്ണ പരീക്ഷിത് റെഫേഴ്സ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ ഇസ് മായാമനുഷ്യൻ. പ്ലീസ് ടോക്ക് ടു മീ അബൌട്ട് ഹിം, ഹി സേസ്. പ്ലീസ് ടോക്ക് ടു മീ അബൌട്ട് ദാറ്റ് മായാമനുഷ്യൻ ഹു ഇസ് പ്ലേയിങ് ദിസ് ഗെയിം ഓൾ ദ ടൈം വിത്ത് എവ്രി വൺ ഇൻ ദിസ് വേൾഡ്. ദിസ് ഇസ് കൃഷ്ണസ് പൊസിഷൻ. സോ ഭാഗവതം ഈസ് ബ്രിംഗിങ് ഔട്ട് സം വെരി സട്ടിൽ തിങ്സ് വിച്ച് വി ഡു നോട്ട് റീഡ് ഇൻ ദ ബുക്സ് ഓർ വിച്ച് വി ഡു നോട്ട് ഹിയർ ഫ്രം എൽസ്വെയർ. സോ ഓൺലി ഇൻ ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം ആൻഡ് ഇൻ ദി ഉപനിഷത്സ് ആൻഡ് ശാസ്ത്രാസ് വെയർ കൃഷ്ണ ഹാസ് സ്പോക്കൺ അബൌട്ട് ദിസ്. സോ ടോക്ക് ടു മീ കൃഷ്ണ കഥ, ടോക്ക് ടു മീ അബൌട്ട് കൃഷ്ണ. സോ യു ക്യാൻ സീ പരീക്ഷിത്സ് അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡിങ് ഓഫ് കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് ഓൺ എ ഹയർ ലെവൽ, ഈസ് ഇറ്റ് നോട്ട്? He is not just seeing Krishna as a simple personality who played his childhood pastimes in Vrindavanam or his pastimes in Mathura or Dwaraka. He is seeing Krishna as tasya akila dehabajam andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. In every living entity, he is present. Parikshit is recognizing that. And inside and outside. Inside as the super soul or jiva also, and outside as the purusha kala rupai in the form of time. He is playing this dual role in this world. Talk to me about that, Krishna, he says. So at that point, inside in the form of the soul, outside in the form of time. Atma Swarupam inside, Kala Swarupam outside. That is Krishna's role there. So talk to me about that, he says. And the same thing, Kala Swarupam means what? What is Kala Swarupam means? Means death. Isn't it? See, we have we come here, say 50, 60, 70 years, whether we like it or not, we have to leave this place, isn't it? So who makes that decision? Krishna makes that decision. Krishna says, now you can go, your time is over, up, out. So that decision Krishna is making for us, that is Kala Rupam, outside Krishna. That is Krishna's presence. By looking at that, we should know Krishna is there, making that decision for us. We have no freedom in these things. It's a decision Krishna is making on our behalf. So from that, an intelligent person, Krishna says, should understand, see me here in this world. If he is not seeing me, then he is not intelligent. As for, he will talk about this later, much more depth. Then earlier also he said that, Akhadam niyamanasya vadyasyavana tushita. Somebody who has been decided to be hung and you are going to offer him some special treats to make him happy. Does it mean anything? Krishna asked that question. Because only Krishna can categorically say to us that death is for everyone. There is nobody who is freed from that, including Lord Brahma. That's why he spoke that verse there before. Right up to Lord Brahma, this thing called death applies. Or Krishna is present in the form of time to Brahma also, in other words. Even Brahma, Lord Brahma has to face this rule of Krishna, Kala Rupam, Kala form there. Brahma has to deal with it. He has no choice. He is even subjected to that. Even he is subjected to that. So what to talk about ordinary people? That's Krishna's point. So, what happened was, while Bhagavad Gita was spoken, Arjuna asked this question. So much up to chapter 10, Krishna has spoken. And Arjuna is asking, who are you? Who are you? Arjuna asked this question to Krishna. So what did Krishna say? Till now, up then, at that point, Krishna understood. Arjuna has not understood me yet. So that is how that universal form was spoken, isn't it? Akhyahimego bhavan ugaruva namostude deva varaprasida. വിജ്ഞാതുമിച്ഛാമി ഭവന്ത മാദ്യം നഹി പ്രജാനാമി തവ പ്രവൃത്തി. വെൻ ഹി സോ ദ യൂണിവേഴ്സൽ ഫോം, അർജുന ഈസ് സേയിങ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ, ആഖ്യാഹിമേകോ ഭവാൻ ഉഗ്രരൂപ നമോസ്തുതേ ദേവവര പ്രസീദ. വിജ്ഞാതുമിച്ഛാമി ഭവന്ത മാദ്യം നഹി പ്രജാനാമി തവ പ്രവൃത്തി. ഐ കനോട്ട് അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡ് യു ഓർ യുവർ ആക്ടിവിറ്റീസ് ആൻഡ് യുവർ ദിസ് ഫോം, വണ്ടർഫുൾ ഫോം സ്റ്റാൻഡിങ് ഇൻ ഫ്രണ്ട് ഓഫ് മീ. ഹു ആർ യു? ദാറ്റ്സ് വൺ ഹി ആസ്കിംഗ്. അർജുന ഈസ് ആസ്കിംഗ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ ആഫ്റ്റർ സീയിങ് ദിസ് ഫോം, who are you? When he saw this form, if you will see this verse in the universal form, chapter 11 in the Bhagavad Gita, when he saw the universal form, Arjuna asked this question to Krishna. Akhyahi mego bhavan ugra roopa namostude deva vara prasida. విజ్ఞాతుం ఇచ్చామి భవంతమాద్యం నహి ప్రజానామి తవ ప్రవృత్తిం. యు హ్యావ్ నో బిగినింగ్ నో ఎండ్, ఐ వాంట్ టు నో దిస్ ఫామ్, హూ ఆర్ యూ, నహి ప్రజానామి తవ ప్రవృత్తిం, యువర్ యాక్టివిటీస్ ఆల్సో ఈజ్ నాట్ ఏబుల్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్. హౌ డిడ్ కృష్ణ రిప్లై దాట్? కాలోస్మి లోక క్షయగర ప్రవృద్ధ లోకాన్ సమాహర్తుమిహ ప్రవృత్తా కృతే విత్వాన్న భవిష్యంది సర్వే వ్యవస్థిత ప్రత్యనీగేషు యోధా. దట్ కాలోస్మి ఐఎమ్ టైమ్, దట్ వాస్ కృష్ణస్ ఆన్సర్. కాలోస్మి ఐఎమ్ టైమ్. సో కాలోస్మి లోక క్షయగర ప్రవృద్ధ, దట్ వెన్ దిస్ లోకం, దిస్ మెటీరియల్ వరల్డ్ హ్యాస్ టు గో త్రూ దిస్ ఫేస్ ఆఫ్ డిస్ట్రక్షన్. And then destruction happens through me. I decide when it has to be destroyed. When we all have to be, thrown away from here. Krishna makes that decision. Kalosmi loga kshayagaral pravardaha. Logan samahartumiha pravardaha. And I devour the whole world when I want it. When the time is all right. Kadevitvanna bhavishyanti sarve evastida pratyanigeshu yodhaha. That there is nothing that happens here without my consciousness, without me being behind it. So everything that is happening in the creation, Krishna's hands are behind it. Krishna wants us to see that. And Krishna also told Arjuna that if you are thinking you are the one who is going to kill all these people here, forget about it, he said. They have already been killed because that decision has been made somewhere else. Krishna has taken that decision already. So you don't have to worry about it, because Arjuna was under the illusion, thinking that he has to kill all these people. Because Krishna has created this war and I am now made responsible to kill all my Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna and all the other family members, Kauravas, they were. And I had to kill all these people. This was Arjuna's, Arjuna Vishada Yogam says like that, isn't it? In the beginning, Arjuna asked this question. So Krishna thought that Arjuna is thinking that he is the one who has to kill all these people. Krishna says, forget about it. It's not your problem. I have already taken that decision. They are already dead, he says there. Isn't it? The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to him, Arjuna, they are already dead. You are only just there now to execute my words. That's all. Nothing more than that. So, Kalosmi loka kshegal pravardham. Then you are just a nimitta matram bhava savyasajin. You are just an instrument to do what I have already made the decision. This is how Krishna spoke about this to Arjuna. So you can see the importance of kalam. Kalam is one of Krishna's feature. And kalam comes out and does things which we are not even conscious of. We are thinking, oh, I have lived 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, all kinds of calculations we make in our materialistic timetables, whatever we do. But Krishna has another way of doing things, and Krishna's time takes away everyone from this world. This is he. Therefore, you will notice this even in the I think it is in the fourth canto, Sri Rudram is spoken. Sri Rudram, when the Prajedas were instructed by Lord Shiva, at that time that is known as Yogadesham in the Bhagavadam, but it is nothing but from Vedas. It's taken. It's called Sri Rudram. So Sri Rudram prayers. The prayer is like this, that when the prayer to, in the Sri Rudram, the prayer is that you are praying to Shiva in that time, Krishna's another form in that position, is praying to him in this way, that the, please remove your bow and arrow and keep it. My obeisances to you, it says like that. Then, that my obeisances to Krishna's anger. That's how it says. My obeisances to Krishna's anger. Because it's Krishna's anger, when that anger come manifests, it destroys us in different places, in different forms. Destruction happens. Destruction is Krishna's anger. So, this perception that the Krishna's another form exists, that we have to always recognize. We cannot always see Krishna. Then, oh, there in the temple, in the deity room, Krishna stands there nicely with the flute in the hand, smiling. When we go there, he is smiling at us, we feel, and wearing a nice garland. Radharani standing nearby, that's very nice. But there is another side of Krishna like this, which is kalam. And it is this kalam that we are in contact with most of the time. It is with kalam we are in contact with most of the time, isn't it? Most of the time we are in contact with Kalam. Kalam is doing several things to us. So it is in the process of Kalam, it will give us a lot of distress also. Kalam gives us a lot of distress. Why is this distress given? Distress is given so that we turn inwards. That is the reason behind it. This lot of distress when Krishna gives, it's only for one reason, that the mind which is going out all the time looking for sense enjoyment, forgetting about Purusha inside, goes towards outward. Kalam gives some kick so that it goes towards Purusha inwards. This is the reason behind it. That unless some heavy distress is given, it won't turn inwards. It will keep on doing. That is very nature of the conditioned soul. Conditioned soul will always look for happiness in this world, trying to adjust this and adjust that. So many adjustments he is trying to make all the time. Why? He just wants some happiness in this world. So when Krishna is kind, or when Krishna decides to give some mercy to somebody, first thing he offers is some distress to him. And so that this mind which has gone out and looking for happiness will stop that activity and look inwards towards the soul. Andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. So therefore, do not think that distress is always bad. Krishna will talk about it later. We have this misconception, oh, this has happened to me. What's the point in serving Krishna? So many years I've done this and I've served him so well, and the result has not been very good. And when Krishna gives us some material wealth and opulences, you see how Krishna is pleased with my devotion. Everything gone wrong there itself. That very understanding fundamentally is wrong. When you are getting material opulences, take it, Krishna is not happy with you. That's why he's giving you plenty. Go and hang yourself somewhere. That's what he's saying. Andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. This is Shastram. This is not something mentally concocted. It is in the Bhagavad Gita. It is there in the Bhagavadam. When Krishna is giving you distress, take it. It is Krishna's mercy. When Krishna is giving you material opulences, take it. Krishna is not happy with you. That's why he's offering you all these kinds of allurements in this world to drive you away. Because you're not going to go inwards to looking for Krishna. Then you will think that what a great personality, I am served Krishna and he is doing this for me. Look, he is doing what I want him to do. That's how we look at it. This is the false ego inside of every living entity, things like this. The false ego is so strong that he is thinking that, look, I have served Krishna and Krishna is doing what I told him to do. This is how the reaction is coming from. People who talk like this, it's a stupidity of their understanding. This is why Shastram has to be there to guide us through. In Srimad Bhagavatam, this one point is very strictly mentioned about it. That every great devotee, proper devotees of Krishna, who have realized the truth, you will find that in them, this honesty about it. That I have been kicked and kicked right and left by Krishna so much that I will never ever again want to find any happiness in this world. This will be their conclusion. That is the proper realization. That's the proper realization. So Krishna, that is Krishna's kindness. Exactly the same words Kunti Devi said to Krishna also, isn't it? Kunti Devi's words are exactly reflecting the same. Kunti Devi said to Krishna also, that vibhada shanduda shashval tatra tatra jagal guru bhavado darshanam yasyal apunar bhava darshanam. If you keep giving me this distress one after the other, I will not take birth again. Because every time when you give me a kick, I will look for you. I'll think about you. Otherwise, I won't think about you. Kunti Devi is talking on behalf of us to Krishna. So this kick is necessary often from Krishna's side. That who is doing that? Kalam. That is the duty of Kalam. So we are actually more in touch with Kalam than the person Krishna in the temple room. Because throughout 24 hours, we are under the grip of this Kalam outside. Because we are outside most of the time, we are not inwards, aren't we? So because we are outside, absorbed in the outside world, Kalam treats us with all these kind of different experiences in this world and constantly reminds us to give up this Abhara Prakriti, that is Bhumi, Apam, Analam, Vayugham, Manasa, Buddhi, 8 things. To give up the association of these 8 things and go inwards. Aparayam prakritim vidhyame paraprakriti inside to go back. So that can only be done by kalam. So that's the duty what kalam does to us. So things, paraprakriti, aparaprakriti, kalam. So kalam's role is important. That's why Krishna is saying, this kalam is one of my features. It just come from me. It's a frightening face. It's a very frightening face sometimes. Just like mothers sometimes, when the small children, they will tell them first. When they don't listen, what do? They give a smack, isn't it, and bring them in. Because children needs that, to be treated in that way sometimes. Otherwise, they won't come to their senses. They will first request them in a nice way, and naturally they won't listen when you tell them in a nice way. So then eventually you give them one slap and bring them in, isn't it? So that they will do what you want to listen to you. So similarly, kalam is Krishna's that form which smacks us when we need a smack to remember him, to remember Krishna. So andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. But you will see that this nature, Krishna's way of dealing with the living entities, is not something new. As I mentioned before, our misunderstanding is that we want to enjoy the world, so much used to find some pleasure in this world outside. So we serve Krishna with that intention. We come with the wrong motive to Krishna, and Krishna corrects our motives and turns it inwards to look towards the soul. Only when it goes back to the soul, it will find the proper happiness and peace. It will not get any happiness from outside, as we saw before. That's the point. And we also think that our false ego is like that. Oh, I am chanting my rounds, I am meditating on Krishna, I am doing my deity worship, I am doing so many things, and I am getting closer to Krishna every day. This is how we are thinking. You can't get closer to Krishna like that. It's not so easy as we think about that. Then suddenly, when everything is going nicely in your spiritual life, Krishna will do something in such a way, someone who is very close to you will be taken out from you. And at that point you start thinking, why did this happen to me? So it is the only way, kalam, because our perception is this, that all these different activities, like spiritual, which we consider as spiritual activities, I'm getting closer and closer to Krishna. We are thinking like that, isn't it? That won't get us there. That's a misunderstanding. When does it happen? It happens at times like this, when Krishna gives a heavy distress in life. It is at that point we really think about Krishna. Otherwise, the whole sadhana bhakti is a mechanical process, goes on day after day after day. Today I've chanted 16 rounds, tomorrow I'll chant 32, day after 64. All kinds of claims we make. But powerful than all these things is this Kalarupam, this powerful form of Krishna, which pushes us to look inwards towards the soul, to look inwards towards Krishna. That's the most important thing. When such a thing happens, naturally there will be some vairagyam inside. Otherwise vairagyam won't come. There are many interesting things about this. That once it so happened, that there was a spiritual master and a disciple. I don't know whether I've told this story before. Anyway, the disciple has been learning Shastram from the spiritual master for many, many years. He was learning Shastram. And after a considerable period of time, once it's how happened, that is, he was a householder and the spiritual master was a sannyasi. So this householder disciple, one day his wife died. So he ran into terrible depression. So he stopped going to the spiritual master because of the death. He was feeling so depressed and he didn't know what to say and all that. So spiritual master went to see him at his house, walked into his house one day, and in a normal way he tried to console him that after all you have learned Shastram, isn't it? That you know that you are eternal You are eternal. Why you should feel this? Coming and going is a part of this life. So many people will come in your life and they will leave you at a particular time. Whether it is wife or husband or children or uncles, aunts, this, that and the other. Everyone will come and go in life. That is a part of life. One who has studied Shastram should not feel disturbed over this. The disciple got upset with the spiritual master. He says, you can talk all this Vedanta to me now because you are not the one who have lost the wife. It's me who has lost the wife, he says. This was his answer to the spiritual master. So spiritual master tried to explain to him, but he said to him that this is not how you understand Shastram. He says, don't talk to me all this Shastram and all. He says, I don't want to hear anymore anything, he said. Spiritual master left him and went away. And when he was crying, he was in terrible distress. obviously, the householder was enjoying his householder life more. Not conscious of Kalarupehi, who is waiting outside to break this so-called happy married life one day. So he went away. The spiritual master said, this is not the right time to talk to him. He went. 6 months gone. There is no word from the disciple. So one day the spiritual master thought, let me drop in and see him. So when he went inside, the disciple was sitting there and watching a serial happily. So he went up to him. Disciple immediately paid his obeisances to the spiritual master and says to him I'm sorry I didn't behave properly. He says, well, that's all right, he said. The spiritual master told the disciple, that's okay. And his mind was half in the serial, what he was watching, and half he was absorbed with the spiritual master. That's all. So he says to him that, why did you show all that emotions and crying and all kinds of distress like that? After all, he says, the disciple says, that's what happens to everyone, isn't it, when somebody death happens. He says, yes, that's true. But you have studied Shastram. Others have not studied Shastram. So you know what is death means. And in spite of that, you have acted more like a normal person in this world. That doesn't look very nice. Why did you feel so get excited and all? He said, so excited and emotional about the whole thing. So the disciple said, well, it was at that time, I'm feeling very bad about it, he said, still, that my wife has left me. So then the spiritual master asked him, can you do me one thing? You know the way you cried that day, can you cry that like that now once again? He asked him, he said, can you cry like the way you cried on that day when your wife died, right now in front of me? So he started smiling. By now the death is finished and gone. Person also has gone from the mind. You see, death is like that. What you have, some close family member who have left you, say 25 years ago, and someone who has left you in your last dream last night, they are both in the same category. There's no difference at all. It's all in the memory. It's all finished. It is no point in talking about it again and again and thinking, oh, it was such a nice time and all. Past is all memory. That's what Krishna is saying. Krishna will talk about this much more in depth later. That if you start taking memory as important, you are lost, Krishna says. Memory is finished. It's all in the memory. 25, 30 years ago, some close member, say father died. And if you start thinking about it today, do you think so much about it? You can't think about it. It's not possible. Why? Because Kalam does this to us. That time gap changes your emotions, feelings, everything. Immediately when the death happens, what you felt, you don't feel it today after 25 years, do you? You won't feel it today. Say 25 years ago someone died very close to you. Now if you think about it, you think, oh yeah, there was somebody like that. I can't remember more than that anything. This is how the thing is. That's the way the consciousness is. So, if it is like that, that the kalam creates these things in us, these changes in us. So, spiritual master told him that this is how it is. You should have had the higher intelligence to understand. If you have studied Shastram properly and reflected on it, you would have accepted it in the proper way. But because Shastram has not penetrated inside, the proper way it should have done, you had to experience all that unnecessary distress and unnecessary emotions about it. This was the lesson to learn from that. Kalam karma subhava mevacham. Then Shri Parvati, Shiva says to Shri Parvati that when the mind moves, chittam starts moving, immediately there is time. When the chittam is steady, in the great sages, this is what you find in them. Their mind is stable. It's undisturbed under all circumstances. Therefore, they do not experience the time also, the effect of the time. Now, people go to astrologers, isn't it? People go to astrologers. What do the astrologers generally do? Astrologers talk to you about the past. Astrologers will talk to you about the future. Past and the future. And their job is to tell you something in the past, and if you get it right, if he gets it right, whatever he will talk about the future, you will believe it. This is how they use it. Bhudam and Bhavi. Bhudam is the past, Bhavi is the future. Vartamanam, that is the present time, they won't talk. Because you have to understand these three things, past, present and the future, what they are. Strictly speaking, there is no such thing as past, present and the future. Past, present and the future doesn't exist. See, with your mind, you touch something, immediately this becomes the past. Isn't it? What does normally the mind do? Mind takes something from the past and interpret in terms of the future all the time. Isn't it? Is that what the mind does or not? Mind will say, oh, this I had this experience with him before, so therefore he is going to do like this in the future with me. So I'm going to react like this. So past and the future, it is a pendulum oscillating between past and future, past and future. In other words, we never live in the present. This is the biggest mistake we all do. Bhakti means living in the present, not in the past, not in the future. That's bhakti. This is important. Because as so long as you are living in the past and interpreting the future on that basis, you are not seeing that your time is running out for executing Krishna consciousness. Strictly speaking, there is no past, there is no present, there is no future. But in the middle of all these things, this thing called mind pops up, and that creates this past, present and the future. Otherwise, there is no such thing. Krishna is saying here that one of Krishna's definition in the Krishna is defined like this in the Thousand Names of Vishnu. Buddha Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu. This is one of the definitions of Krishna's name. Buddha Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu. Budham and Bhavyam. Bhavat is Krishna. Is Krishna. So if you start sticking to past, past is all memory. Future is all expectations or imaginations. Neither of them are real. We are misunderstanding that astrologer is going to tell you everything because something has got it right in the past. We take it, but we have to remember future is Krishna's empire completely. It is in Krishna's hands. We haven't got any control on that. It is in Krishna's hands in the form of Kalam. Kalam controls our future. Andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. Then we have no entrance in that, towards that empire, Krishna's empire, which is the future. We have no entrance towards that. Why do we say that present is important? Because you can experience Krishna only in presence. In the present time. Right now, if you want to experience Krishna, you can experience Krishna. By chanting the holy name, even while taking prasadam, you can experience Krishna. But if all the time, if the mind is absorbed in the past, or in the future, you cannot experience Krishna. You cannot experience Krishna. This is the important point Sudeva Goswami is making to Parikshit. That in order to become Krishna conscious, we have to give up living in the past. We have to give up living in the future as well. We have to live in the present. And we forget that all the time. And what do? Based on the past, we interpret the future and accordingly we make our plan. We never live in the present. This is what the sad thing is. So when we as I mentioned, past is memory, future is imagination or expectations. Neither of them are real. Can you bring back something what has happened 25 years ago back to this now today? It's not possible. That's memory now. Even if you want to have it, you can't have it. It's memory. It's gone. It's finished there. We have to learn to leave it at that time. And similarly, whatever that is going to happen in the future, if you think about it, that is just imagination in our head. What will come, in whatever form it comes, how it comes, that is in Krishna's hands. Therefore, Krishna's point is, we should live in the present, and that's bhakti. One who lives in the present, he is Krishna conscious. One who lives in the past or who lives in the future, he is not a devotee. Is not a devotee. So, so, because the mind is like this, as I said before, this thing called mind comes up and breaks the time into three. Isn't it? Breaks the time into three, as past, present and the future. Strictly speaking, in respect to what? This present and past and future. All respect to this body, isn't it? All with respect to the body, it makes these three things, past, present and the future. But strictly speaking, there is only one thing, that's present. Past is gone, future don't know. What exists is only the present. So that is why it is said. Because of this reason only, if you remember, I mentioned this before, the so-called thing called history, what they teach is all nonsense. For this reason, what is the use of this history? Tell us about from the Vedic point of view, you can go and study this history year after year. What is the use from this? People talk, history repeats itself, I believe. What history repeats? Complete Maya this is. That if you want to study history, let me explain this from the Shastri point of view. If you want to study history, you need your mind. Isn't it? With the mind only you are studying the history and you are interpreting the future about history. What you have studied in the 50 years ago, World War happened, or 1914-1918, First World War. And by studying history, could they say that will be another World War in 1939? They were studying history then also. Could they predict that there will be a second World War in 1939? They couldn't. Could they predict now when the next World War will be? They can't. So what's the point in all these things? Because history is based on this thing called mind and past, present and the future, from Shastri point of view, it is total nonsense. Total nonsense it is. Sages who knew this, what did they do? They said, keep the mind away from this. Don't use the mind to understand things. If you start studying things with the mind, you will be lost. You won't make any progress. To understand the soul, if you try to use the mind to study the soul, you will not make that progress in there. Therefore, Yoga Vasishtam talks about that. Vartamanam anayasam bhajat. You can engage the present properly in Krishna service. Bhuta bhavishyat abhajat. You should not engage your time in the past or in the future. If you are doing this, it is nothing but maya. Anybody who is studying history and thinks that he is contributing something to this world, as far as Shastra is concerned, he is fool number one. He has no value from the Shastra because it's all based on the mind. It's all based on the mind. So we have to say these things very strongly, because how much we are misled by the thoughts what the modern world is offering to us. How does it help us? We are wasting our valuable time in life in studying things which have not helped us, except probably to get a job. You can go and teach history somebody else after that in the university again with your doctorate or whatever that is. But in the process of self-realization, it is a complete waste of time, this thing called history. So history is never to be taught. That is why never in the Vedic tradition you will find they are teaching history to anybody. History is never taught. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. Because they are thinking this thing called past, present and future has come from the mind. And it is with this mind you are studying history and creating past, present and future again. Shastra is asking, Kim Sukham Martya Dharmina, by studying this, who has got a benefit from this history? Self-realization, absolutely useless. To get a job, fine, good enough. That's all it's worth for. So therefore, Shastra is saying like that, that one who has developed this nature, always to live in the present, Krishna is saying here, there's a word used for that, amani bhavam. He will get the right attitude in life. He lives every moment in life. Now I have to serve Krishna, right now, at this point in time. In that way things, he lives his life like that. When he is not doing physically anything, he chants the holy name, keeps his contact with Krishna in that way. Or he reads Srimad Bhagavatam and keeps relationship with Krishna in that way. But he does not want to believe in the so-called past or the promised future, like our politicians promises all the time, isn't it? All the elections they come and promises, after this election I tell you how things are going to be, vote for me. That's what it is, yeah. And we have got used to it so much. They also got used to it. So neither of us complain anymore. So this is the world. But Shastram is telling us that what's the use of all these things? This is not self-realization. This won't help you in the process of realizing the self. That is Krishna's point. Krishna is saying to us, when the baby was within the womb of the mother, was somebody going there with the milk bottle and feeding the baby? How did 10 months that baby stayed inside and grew up without anybody supplying the milk bottle? And when it's the time the boy or girl came out from the womb, who is running this show? We foolishly think that we have the control over the whole world, past, present and the future. And on that understanding, we have developed all kinds of subjects to discuss and study in the university. And we send children, we go there, study, get all these degrees. Children go and study, get all these degrees. And at the end, what have we learned? Nothing. That's why through the eyes of the Shastram, when you see through the eyes of Krishna's words, you can see how foolish we are in many of our work, endeavors. Then, Andarbahi Purusha Kala Rupaihi. So long as, Krishna is saying here another point, so long as you study this thing called history and all that, what will happen is you will be driven further away from the truth. You will be taken away from the truth more, because if you keep studying this thing called history and so many other subjects also for many, many years, you will condition to think in that way. That will become your truth. Then you cannot drop it because it has gone so much inside. It has gone into your blood so much that it is very difficult to drop it afterwards. I think too much philosophy is bothering, isn't it? So we'll go to a story now. Once it so happened, Bhishma Pitamaha, after the war, after the war what happened? He fell down on the bed of arrows, isn't it? So our Arjuna built the bed of arrows for Bhishma to lie down. Lying on that bed of arrows, Bhishma Pitamaha spoke about dharmam. You know the story of dharmam? Bhishma's dharmam is very important because in Mahabharata it runs into several chapters. Bhishma's instructions on dharma. In Bhagavatam, you saw in the first canto, Krishna takes Yudhishthira Maharaj and the Pandavas towards Bhishma to get instructed from Bhishma. And that's when dharma was spoken. And Bhishma authority on dharma, Krishna recognized it. Ekadasha Skandam later, Krishna will talk about Bhishma and Bhishma's instructions on dharma. Two or three chapters will come later when we come to Varnashrama Dharma. Krishna will quote Bhishma there. Krishna always quotes somebody, some authority whom Krishna considers as important. Why they are important? Because Swayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumara Kabilo Manu Prahlada Janago Bhishma Varim Vayasagir Vayam. 12 authorities on Bhagavata Dharma, Bhishma is one among them. Remember that. Bhishma is one among the 12 authorities on religious principles. Swayambhu, Brahma, Narada, Shambhu, Shiva, Kabila Maharshi, Prahlada, Manu, Prahlada Janaka, King Janaka, Bhishma, Mahabali, Vedavyasa, Vyasagi, Yamadharma Raja. They are all authorities on the Dharma. So Bhishma is an authority on Dharma. So while he was lying on the bed of arrows, Krishna brings all these Pandavas there along with the great sages who all arrived there to hear from Bhishma about dharma. You remember I mentioned about Bhishma's realizations last time through that story of the Mangi and the Medhavi, two stories in the Mahabharatam I mentioned before. Bhishma is saying to Yudhishthira Maharaj that ultimately, my dear Yudhishthira, every effort what you put in this world is controlled by somebody else who will decide what is going to happen. What will happen? Bhishma tried very hard to control the empire through Vichitrangada and Vichitravirya, later on through Dhritarashtra and Pandu. All fail, and eventually at least he thought, I'll manage with Duryodhana and others. That also collapsed. The camel woke up. Remember that story I mentioned before? So this Bhishma, who had gone through all these experiences, these Kshatriyas in Hastinapur, they were not ordinary people. They were into great levels of sense enjoyment, and their authority and their rajasic nature was so strong to control the world that staying there, they continued these activities very much. So at that point, Bhishma Pitamaha was addressed by Yudhishthira Maharaj and asked about dharma to Bhishma. And Bhishma is replying. So side by side, who was standing there? Draupadi was standing there. When Bhishma started talking about dharma, Draupadi laughed. Do you know why it is? Don't you? That this same Bhishma, only a few years ago, while sitting in the assembly of the Kauravas, and when Dushasana acted in such a disgusting way, tried to disrobe her and insult her, not a word was spoken by this Bhishma. And you are now talking about dharma, she said to him. Openly, my dear grandfather, I don't think you should be talking about dharma. This was the words that came from Draupadi. Draupadi said this to Bhishma. So Bhishma's answer you should see there at that time, how he answered that. He said, that up to this time, he said, I had eaten food from a person called Duryodhana. Duryodhana's food I have eaten. And because I have eaten his food, my blood is completely polluted with that. Completely polluted with that. But after Arjuna shot all the arrows on my body, and all that blood has been now purified. And now I can talk about dharma, he says. This is called in Shastram, what is called known as Ashraya Dosham. Ashraya Dosham means, if you take anything from anyone, if you take anything from anyone and use it in your living, for your living, all the bad effects from that person will come to you. This is a very subtle side of it. That is why the great sages don't accept anything from anybody, or great devotees, unless they know it's all completely used in serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not affected by any of these things. This is the reason for that. It's called Ashraya Dosham. Ashraya Dosham is one of the most important dosham that can come to you by accepting from others anything. By accepting anything from others. So, therefore, Krishna is saying here, this Bhishma Pitamaha says to our Draupadi, that now I know how my intelligence was lost. I could not act at that time properly. Why? Because I have taken this food from Duryodhana's kitchen. I was eating that food. Food is such an important thing that four defects are mentioned while eating food. Important things, defects. Sambandha dosham, Nimitta dosham, Ashraya dosham, Jati dosham. Four problems. Ramanujacharya explains this very detailed. Ramanujacharya particularly gives importance to food. Why is he saying like that is, let's look at each one of them, what they are. Jati dosham, for example. There are certain type of foodstuff one should not eat. They are not favorable for self-realization. We are thinking that food is okay, after all, it's coming from Radharani's bakery or elsewhere, whatever it is, whatever we say. We take it for granted, it's okay. Isn't it? But from the Shastram is saying that the food, particularly in reference to Jati Dosham, it says that the type of food one has to discriminate. Only that food what will create sattvagunam in one person, one should consume. Why? Sattval sanjayate jnanam. From sattvagunam only jnanam will come. Knowledge will come. And karmam rajogunam. Karmam will come from rajogunam. So these are very related things. Karmam will come from rajogunam. Sattval sanjayate jnanam. So, discriminating the type of food what we eat is first thing. Secondly, who is preparing the food? The person who prepares the food, if he is Krishna conscious and if he is doing out of love for Krishna, that food can be eaten. That is why that food should be eaten. That is why when the mother is cooking food, and if while cooking the food, watching the serial and cooking the food, serial on the television, don't blame if the husband or the children goes in the wrong direction. Nobody else is to be blamed at that time. It's such an important element in life. When the food is cooked, if it is not cooked in Krishna consciousness, either by chanting the holy name or with the mood of offering to Krishna, if it is not cooked in that way, it is not the proper food to be eaten. This is the Sambandha Dosham. It comes from that. Jati Dosham, Sambandha Dosham. Then Ashraya Dosham. Ashraya Dosham means what we were talking about. That you take the food from people who have no Krishna consciousness. Anywhere and everywhere. Thinking that, oh, it's only one food, I just to fill my belly up and eat like that, Krishna consciousness will be difficult to develop. So, and similarly, Sambandha dosham, Nimitta dosham, Jati dosham, Ashraya dosham. Four things are mentioned like this in relationship with the food. So, the fourth one, which is Ashraya dosham we have seen, Jati dosham we have seen, Sambandha dosham we have seen, Nimitta dosham. There. That is the one, while preparing food, how careful he is in using the right things for the food. For example, say a hair falling into the food or pots which are not clean, things like that. In tamogunam, cooking in otherwise in tamogunam, that is also considered to be one of the doshams in the food. Vaishnava Acharyas, particularly Ramanujacharya, gives importance to it very much. And he wouldn't allow anybody to cook his food. He cooks his own food. Ramanujacharya, throughout his life, he cooked his own food, especially after taking sannyas. And that is, Krishna says, is the best remedy for everything. One cooks one's own food if possible. Otherwise, mother or wife can cook, but they should be trying to cook food in this way, in Krishna consciousness. So, this experience is what is important, that Vishwavidyamaha was saying Ashraya Dosham. In relationship with that, we have seen how accepting food from somebody's house, he may be a very wealthy, rich man, but that may not help you in your spiritual life. You may be thinking the prasadam is very nice, but whether is it nice or not, that who will decide that? So while eating, this is one important consideration. A devotee should, as much as possible, because it is important, this prasadam, what is going inside, how one should be particularly careful about what one is, how it is prepared and how it's taken. So that is another important point. Yes. So we're talking about this dependence on Krishna. So as I've mentioned before, that history creates all these kind of illusions in our head. That history is telling us in the past all this happened. They are saying that, oh, we had a nuclear bomb dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and from that we have learned a lesson, it will not drop again. Can anybody guarantee that? But then if it drops, they will say history repeats itself. So what do you say to these people? Before it drops, they say, oh, it won't drop again because we had a great experience in Hiroshima. It won't drop again. When it drops, they will say history repeats itself. So this is what is history does to us. What we have to recognize here, Krishna is the controller. Krishna controls everything to the very minute level. He controls us. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudhalma kartaham idi manyade, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So similarly, this incident also we were talking about, that at every step one has to be conscious of this. There was an emperor by name Shivaji. He was building a fort once. He was building a fort during the time when the kings were ruling. So Shivaji was a powerful king, and in a place called Sajangad in Maharashtra, when he was building this fort, Shivaji was thinking, oh, it is a great opportunity. I am able to provide food to so many people. Thousands and thousands of people are working there in building this fort. A big fort he was building there at that time. In that days, everything was done by manually, isn't it? Manually everything was done. So there were thousands and thousands of people working at the site. His own spiritual master was known as Ramdas, Samartha Ramdas he was called. He was present there at that time. And Shivaji was thinking like this about his glory, about that he was able to maintain so many people. And he was feeling very proud about this. Ramdas understood the mood of the disciple. So he called one of the workers there and told him to remove a big boulder, a big stone from there. Break it, he said. Broke the stone. When he broke open the stone inside, there was a small frog inside. Have you seen this type of frogs which sits inside some of these stones or underneath some pillars for many, many years? And you wonder where they get their food from. They live there. They live there. So when this frog jumped out, Ramdas asked Shivaji, are you feeding that frog as well? He says to Shivaji to make him understand that he is not feeding anybody. Nobody is feeding anybody. Krishna is feeding everyone. And every living entity in this world gets food by Krishna's arrangement, not by anything else. So the important thing is that Krishna's hands in everything, that is Kalam. That is Kalam. Kalam That is why Parikshit Maharaj asked that question. Viryani tasya akila lokabhajam dehabhajam andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. Andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. And then prayachado mrityumrdam vadaswa maya manishyasya vadaswa vidvan. Krishna, he wanted to know about Krishna in that form from Sukadeva Goswami. That is what he was talking about. So, coming back to this, that we are talking about the time. Then, as I mentioned before, when we are situated in the present, that is bhakti. Otherwise, there is no bhakti. Most of the time, while we chanting also, it is between past and future. Past and future. Past and future. Planning for the future, thinking about the past. This is constantly the mind does, isn't it? So, bhakti is not, Krishna is saying here, that out of the 9 processes of devotional service, Krishna says, what are they? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnor Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. Atmanivedanam is only possible when you are present, when you are living in the present. If you are in the future, you cannot do Atmanivedanam. If you are in the past, you cannot do Atmanivedanam. You can do Atmanivedanam in the present only. That is the reason we have to live in the present. Do you see that point? That Atmanivedanam, the 9th surrender to Krishna, so long as one is living in the past or future, he cannot do it. He may say with the lips, oh, I am surrendered to you, Krishna, but he is living in the future, thinking about what future is going to bring or what past has happened. That's not surrender. So surrender is possible only when one lives in the present. And that is only possible when one give up the thoughts of past and give up the thoughts of the future. That means one should not study history. So, for a person who has surrendered to Krishna, all times is auspicious. All the time is auspicious. Nothing is inauspicious for him. Sometimes people think, oh, I have to look at the time, whether it is Rahu Galam or Gulya, whatever, that is different times, how they, the astrologers say. No, for devotee, one who has surrendered to Krishna, for him, there is no inauspicious planets, there is no inauspicious time. These things are our mental like we talked about fear of Krishna. Similarly, these things have come to us in the form of different fear. And that's what it is. Because we are not surrendered to Krishna, all these things of fear has come to us. I mentioned when we traveled last time to Tamil Nadu, we talked about a personality called Jnana Sambandar. I don't know whether you remember this temple where we went to. We also saw there was a deity or a in that temple where Sri Parvati feeds the milk to Jnana Sambandar, and how at an early age of 3.5 years. And Jnana Sambandar's father, Shivabhada Hridaya, he was a great devotee. And at the time when these things happen, if you look at the background, you will see how things can get changed. For example, at that particular time in the history, the Jain religion was very prominent. Jainism throughout India, Jainism was spread everywhere. But it so happened, the spread of Jainism, along with that, Jainism lost its purity also. It has also become like the Hinduism today. What does it mean? It means a religion which is there where there is no saintly people. Everything is done for acquiring money, making followers, getting people somehow or the other, acquiring wealth and getting power in the hands. The religion becomes like this. This is what's happening in the modern world in the name of religion. What we are seeing everywhere. Want to acquire wealth, get hold of the power in the hands, so go through politics and go through politicians, they influence the government, somehow get the government under control if possible.
The religious people do these things. Followers they want. All this has nothing to do with the truth. Truth is far away from all these things. Mistakenly they think this is all spiritual life and they fall victimized by all these things. Exactly same thing happened to Jainism at that time. There was nobody in Jainism religion at that time who were examples. No vairagyam, no bhakti, no knowledge, no renunciation, nothing. Just getting people onto your side somehow or the other. And also get control of the power of the kings who were ruling at that time. The Jains, the philosophers at that time, the Jain leaders of the community, they managed to influence the kings as well. And they managed to get control of them, of the royal family as well. Which means that you have a complete control on the people then. Once you get control of the royal family or the kings, then you have a control over the people. This is what happened in the Jainism. And that is not the fault of the Jainism, I am saying. How religion can deteriorate very easily. It doesn't take very long to deteriorate in this way. It will become like this. So, this happened. Shivabhadra Hriday was a devotee. He could see what was going on. So he was praying that let me have a child who can change this situation. Exactly like Advaita Acharya prayed to it for appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the same way, great devotees will pray at that time when they see the situation is very hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. Because in the name of religion, so much nonsense was going on. All in the name of religion. They are all spiritual leaders. But there is no spirituality anywhere. So this happened and Shivabhadra Hriday took this little boy, Jnana Sampandar, and as you saw, remember, if you remember, he asked the baby to sit there on the steps and he went and took, he was bathing in the tank. Droni Preshuram temple it's called. He was bathing in the tank and the baby was crying for milk to drink. At that time Shivabhadra Hriday was thinking, because he has, they are coming from a background where they won't accept food from anyone freely like that. So he didn't want the baby to have milk from anybody. He wanted him to wait till he comes back. And they chant what known as Akhamashana Mantram in the water. While standing in the water, they chant the Akhamashana Mantram and afterwards they come out from the water. Shivabhadra Hriday came out from the water and he saw the milk dripping from the lips of the baby, 3.5 years old. 3.5 years old little boy. The milk was dripping from the lips. So he got upset with him. For what? Because he has taken milk from somebody whom he should not have accepted the milk from. So he asked the boy, who gave you the milk? So this little boy who got fed by milk by Shivarvadi, he glorified Shivarvadi and Shiva who came together and fed the milk of knowledge to him. That is how he was given this title as Jnana Sambandha. So this Jnana Sambandha receives the milk. Obviously, this was Krishna's arrangement that somebody had to come to propagate proper religion in this world. So this little boy, 3.5-year-old boy, he grows up there. It was at the same time, there was another great personality. Everybody was studying the Jainism scriptures at that time. There was a great personality called Tirunavakarasa. He was studying Jainism religion for 30 years in Patna, in Pataliputra. He studied the Jainism religion. And after that, he had this realization that how can I accept these things when Vedas are giving a higher authority on all these things. All these religious processes have come to question the Vedic authority. And every one of them failed at some point or the other, including Buddhism. They couldn't stand in front of the Vedic authority. Vedas are authority. Anything that is questioned the authority of the Vedas eventually had to go away from the people's life in many instances. That's all. You should not get confused with people, oh, there are many people who are practicing Jainism. Okay, by birth you may get a body from a Jain background. But are you relating to the truth? Are you going after the truth? This is a question we have to ask. So anyway, this happened was, this personality decided to come back to this village where Jnana Sambandha was born. From Patna, he walks back. After 30 years of studying Jainism, he comes back. And he had this intuition. Krishna connects people together when it is necessary. That is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's plans nobody understand. When Krishna wants to connect devotees together, he will connect the devotees together. So naturally, when he came back, Jnanasambandar was waiting here. It was at that time that in the royal family, the king got very ill. The king got very ill. And by now, Jnanasambandar has become popular at the age of 3.5 years. He has already started speaking about spiritual knowledge to others. And they were completely captivated. Jains were feeling the pressure from him, from this little boy. So one day, the queen realized the situation and tells the king that we should invite this little boy to come to the palace and to talk to you. So the king arranges a debate between this boy, 3.5-year-old, Jnanasambandar, and the other Jain pandits who are present in the royal court. So when they invited the boy, Jnanasambandar, to come to the court, he replies them back saying that if I'm going for a debate, I should be invited properly. I should be taken in a palanquin to the court. So the king sends the palanquin for him to come to the court. And when the palanquin was brought towards the court, one of the persons who was carrying this palanquin was this personality, Tirunavukarasha, who spent 30 years studying Jainism in Pataliputra. So devotees can smell other devotees easily. Immediately, not by wearing the uniform, but by devotional mood, you will sense a devotee easily. Who is a devotee? So our devotees also sensed this. Jnanasambandar sensed devotee is carrying this palanquin. He asked for him. He was 80 years old and Jnanasambandar was 3.5 years old. 80-year-old person was carrying the 3.5-year-old boy in a palanquin to the palace. So it so happened that when he asked the question, immediately the reply came from the person who was carrying the palanquin, "I am here." He called for his name and asked about it. Immediately they kept the palanquin and this 80-year-old person pays his obeisances to 3.5-year-old boy. Jnanasambandar left this world when he was 17 years old. By 17 years he was finished with his mission and he was gone. He was taken to the palace and in the debate he beat them all these scholars who were present there. And naturally, Jnanasambandar was installed as the authority and the king came back to Vedic philosophy again under the influence of Jnanasambandar. From then on, Jnanasambandar's life is very interesting. Many things happened after that. Many, many great devotees came to him to learn from him. He didn't live very long. By the age of 17, he left this world. There are many, many great personalities. Every Jnanasambandar, Jnaneshwari in Maharashtra, the same history behind it. Jnaneshwar, if you read Srimad Bhagavad Gita's commentary, Jnaneshwari it is called, Jnaneshwar's commentary, he lived only up to 16 years. He left the world by 16. Krishna sends people all the time, great, great personalities. They live very short time in this world. Their message is once executed, then they leave this world. And that's when the religion is properly followed. When they leave the world, everything changes. Everything goes back into the normal, then everybody is very spiritual after that. So, here we are talking about such an incident that this little Jnanasambandar won't allow him to pay his obeisances to him. So, so once it so happened that in another instance when he was invited for a debate, personality who was following Jnanasambandar, he advised Jnanasambandar that you should not go because some of these Jain scholars at that time, they were not very reasonable in their dealings. And it is possible that as a little boy, you can get hurt from them. At that time, Jnanasambandar's reply, you should see how he replied him. He says, "This does not affect a devotee.
For a person, for a devotee, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they are all good days. All the nine planets, Budhan, Shukran, Bhumi, Mars, Jupiter, they are all good planets. All of them are in the good positions for a devotee. Otherwise, everything is inauspicious, he says. So those who have to look into inauspicious time, inauspicious planets, they have to worry about such things. One who has surrendered to Krishna, he doesn't have to look into all that. And that surrender is possible only in the present. It's not possible. We are thinking, oh, we'll surrender after retirement, isn't it? Some people say like that. After retirement, I'm going to surrender to Krishna. That's future. Or we talk about the past, I was very surrendered to Krishna, then not anymore, we say. So never there was any surrender. Proper surrender is all the time surrendered to Krishna. That is surrender. So, it is from this words thing that Krishna is saying here, Lokanam Lokapalanam Madbhayam Kalpajivinam Brahmano Vibhayam Marto Divarardha Parayushaham. That everyone is frightened, Krishna says. Everyone is frightened of me, including Lord Brahma. Divarardha Parayusha. Such a long lifespan. Such a long lifespan. Only who is not frightened of Krishna, the self-realized soul, is not frightened of Krishna. Because for him, time doesn't exist. For him, time doesn't exist. Then you may ask the question, is Brahma frightened of Krishna? Bhagavatam says yes. Brahma. So is Brahma not a self-realized soul? According to Bhagavatam, no. It's not. Why? Because he is engaged in karmam. Because of karmam, because of rajogunam, because of karmam, sometimes Brahma's mind also moves. You will see that in the chapter after this, 13th chapter. So now we are on the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th chapter. You will see Brahma also got sometimes completely lost. He couldn't answer the question. When the four Kumaras went up and asked a question to Brahma, Brahma couldn't reply. And the reason given for that is Brahma is engaged in karma, in creation. So karma is rajogunam, and rajogunam brings these things in us, and because of that the mind will move. It is never possible to keep the mind under control. That chittam will start moving. So Krishna is saying, this is what is spoken here. Lokanam Lokabalanam Madbhayam Kalpajivinam Brahmanobibhayam Martho Dibarardha Parayushaham. Then in the next verse, Guna Srajandi Karmani Guno Anisrajade Gunan Jivastu Gunasam Yukto Bhunte Karmabhalanyasaum. Then, so far Krishna was talking about Mimamsagas, isn't it? That's when all these things came up. So, having spoken about this Brahma, and also about the controllers of this world, Lokapalanam, Krishna is saying here, although you can see that the Brahma's lifespan is very long, even then his fear is not small. His fear is also big, as much as his long lifespan is. Then, guna srijandi karmani guno anisrijade gunan jivastu guna samyukto bhunte karma bhalanyasaum. Guna, then, the senses are creating karma. The senses are, senses is what creates the karma, isn't it? And sattvam, rajasa, tamasa, different kinds of modes of nature accordingly encourages us to act in different gunas. In different gunas. Sattvagunam acts in one way, rajogunam acts in another way, tamogunam acts in a different way. But all three gunams has an impact on us. There is no doubt about that. What happens with Sattvagunam? Sattvagunam means what? Sattvagunam means Prakasham and enlightenment, isn't it? Knowledge and enlightenment means Sattvagunam. So Sattvagunam has this difficulty. It creates a sense of happiness in this world. We think we are happy in Sattvagunam because you don't get easily disturbed over material life easily. And also you feel that life is not too bad, everything is nice going on, and because of the knowledge inside and because of the illumination or enlightenment, you feel happy always in Sattvagunam. That itself is a problem. That's what Bhagavatam is saying. So that will create its own karmam in a different way. It will not relieve you from karmam. You are not outside karmam yet. Karmam is still there. Rajogunam creates karmam in a different way. How? Rajogunam, we don't have to explain that, isn't it? We know very well what Rajogunam is like. If you want to see Rajogunam, you don't have to go very far. You just have to look around and we'll see how Rajogunam is working all the time. In different activities, continuously encouraging us to engage in different activities, that's Rajogunam. So Rajogunam's power is Pravrti and Abhimanam. I am doing this and I am the doer and feeling the pride in that. I am the doer and feeling the pride in that. So Pravrti action and pride from that. These two are goes along with Rajogunam. Then, so that happens all the time. Rajodigaha karmavaraha, continuously karma. And now when neither of these two gunas are not there in a person, the third gunam, tamogunam, comes in. What does tamogunam mean? Nidra alasyam, always in a sleeping mood and laziness, always not feeling any enthusiasm to do anything and feeling very lazy or sleepy about everything. So that's tamogunam. And also lamentation about everything. Oh, this has gone wrong, everything has gone wrong like this, what can I do, what will happen tomorrow, I don't know. And this kind of constantly mourning and groaning about future and living like this. That is tamogunam. Now, these three gunas, sattvam, rajas and tamas, it can happen to everyone at any time. But generally it is said, generally, when we wake up in the morning, it is sattvagunam. Normally, as you start the day in sattvagunam, but you start your work and get absorbed in the work, you become very much influenced by rajogunam. And by evening, after a whole day of rajogunam, the tendency is to fall into the tamogunam. So that's why we say Brahma Muhurtam sattvagunam is favorable for spiritual life, for this reason only, that sattvagunam is more in a person in a natural way at that time than rajogunam and tamogunam. Whereas evening, when you say that I'll chant my 16 rounds before I go to bed, you can imagine what kind of rounds that will be, that 16 rounds, what you will be chanting in the late in the evening at 10 o'clock before you go to bed. It's just like filling up rota or filling up your... it won't get anywhere. So, sattvagunam is meant for spiritual life, spiritual activity. That's why to get up in the morning early. Important, because there is no other time in the day suitable for spiritual life. Therefore, spiritual life in the morning. So, but these gunam can change in anyone. It's not that one has got all the time sattvagunam or all the time rajogunam, all the time tamogunam. Gunams are always changing, isn't it? Gunas rajanti karmani. So according to gunam, you are working also. But what normally happens is that sometimes you falls into tamogunam. Then if you are in sattvagunam, say you feeling sattvagunam or sattvic nature, if you find a person who is in tamogunam, you should keep away from the person. If you know that intuition you will get from inside, even by talking to him, or if you just touch him or associate with him in any way, that tamogunam will drag you down straight away. It will drag. So powerful is tamogunam. Just like we say, if you are in the association of devotees who are in sattvagunam or great mahatmas, great souls, if you are in their association, they will elevate you in sattvagunam. Similarly, tamogunis can drag you down also in the same way. This is why we say we should not associate with people who have infected with tamogunam too much. Because their association, if such a thing happens to someone, the best thing to do, if somebody feels I am very much infected by tamogunam, you will know that when tamogunam is controlling us strongly, you can immediately know that, how it affects us. Best thing is to go inside the house and get into a room, lock the door from inside and sit there till that tamogunam leaves you. Otherwise, that's the best thing. Just like, you know, what they have this, they put you in a, what do they call it?
Quarantine,
yes. So you have to create your own quarantine and stay there when till your tamogunam leaves you. That's the way. Because tamogunam will create this situation. You will drag others down with the tamogunam, what we bring with us. So tamogunam brings nidra, alasyam, and laziness and sleepy and lamentation about. You cannot live in the present in tamogunam. You'll be simply worrying about the past, what happened, and worrying about the future. Never allow you to live the present. That's another thing. Secondly, rajogunam, of course you can see where the problem is. Rajogunam won't allow you to live anything, do anything. It'll simply drag you to work, do this, do that. I'm doing this, what have you done, they will say to you. And I've done so much, and what have you done? They will ask this question. And they will drive you, will not allow you to read Srimad Bhagavatam or think about it, because their rajogunam is pumping them so strongly that they cannot sit 5 minutes and think about this life, what is going on here in this. So that is the nature of the rajogunam. Satogunam, as I mentioned, also binds you in another way. That is, a kind of happiness comes in, whereby your desire for sattva sanjayate jnanam, that sattvam brings this difficulty, a certain happiness in this world, which makes you feel not the necessity to inquire after the truth. So, three gunas, three modes of nature Krishna is talking about. Gunas rajandi karmani, karma guno anisrajade gunan, jivastu gunasamyukto bhunkte karma bhalanyasau. Then Krishna is saying here that we talked about Ishvara before, a controller, isn't it? And Mimamsakas refuse to accept the controller. They say Ishvara don't exist. Then kartratvam, boktratvam. I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. If they are not accepting this, that actually doer and the enjoyer is not the soul. It is not the soul. Who is the doer and the enjoyer? It's a false ego inside. It's the doer and the enjoyer. That Alma, the soul, is never the doer. That he is not even making the senses to engage in the activities. It's all the gunas are doing that. Engaging the senses in the different activities are the for the senses. Or in other words, the I am the doer, that doership is not for the soul, but it is for the it is because of the identification with the body. And boktratvam also, I am the enjoyer, is for the false ego. False ego has created this. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. It is not the soul that has created. Therefore, they are saying, soul has no bondage. Soul is no bondage. In the next chapter, that is in the 11th chapter, when we begin, this will be the first question from Uddhava. Uddhava will ask this question, how did the soul get entangled like this? In every question Uddhava is asking, or in every question when the sages reply or Krishna replies, they will say yes and no. For every question the answer is like that, yes and no. You will see like that. This is because it's a very interesting part in the, see how subtle the thinking of the sages are. You have to go and feel it. Only when you feel it, you will understand how intelligent they were. Intelligent in the sense that how such a subtle level they were able to operate in their dealings. Give you an example. Just like when Newton saw the apple falling, isn't it? So he asked the question, why and how? Whole modern science is based on these two things, why and how. Why did the apple fall? How did the apple fall? Okay, the answer is there, gravitational force and all that kind of science what we study in the school and college. That's fine, that's okay. After getting that answer, what has happened to Newton? Nothing has happened, is it? Okay, Newton got some answer that apple is falling like that. The Shastram, the saint sages says, don't go in that route.
this why and how business. Find out who has the doubt inside. That's why self-realization is important. If you keep on asking questions and somebody is keep on giving you answers whole life, you are not going to get self-realized at the end. The important point they are making is, where is these doubts coming from first? Find the doubter. Who is doubting this? All these questions, who is raising? Go after him, not with the doubts. And this is why they never encouraged, they have never feel obliged to answer any question. All questions Uddhava is asking, Krishna is not giving any straight reply anywhere. Everything is yes and no. Yes and no. Why? Because Krishna knows the problem. That self-realization hasn't come to Uddhava yet. Once you have realized the self, you will know all these doubts has no meaning. These doubts has come, why? Because you are on a mental platform operating all the time. You have fallen from the spiritual platform. You come to the mental platform and you are doubting everything. And you want an answer, your intelligence has to be satisfied with it. As far as Krishna is concerned, it is not Krishna's duty to satisfy our mind. Mind is a material thing, come from the material nature. Get rid of this disease first inside, Krishna says. So therefore, what the sages did was, in the past, always it was like this. They never believed in answering questions in that way. When you go to them with questions, they will tell you, stay with me for 10 years, I'll answer you after that the question. They will say to you, just stay with me for 10 years. Because they know, after 10 years, this man's false ego would have completely gone. And he would have got purified enough that that question will not occur again to him inside. This is the way to answer all the questions. Otherwise, so many answers can be given to questions. But one answer will create 10 questions further from him. That's what will happen to this question answer business. So the sage's point was this. Ahankara nasham. Killing the false ego first. And Manashandi, peaceful mind. If these two things are there, properly done in a person, the doubts will automatically disappear about spiritual life. What soul? Soul will illuminate automatically from inside. He does not require any more question answers after that. Question answer is in a stage like this. When we are asking questions, constantly somebody is giving you answers also, and eventually you will think, oh, there's still I have some more questions to ask. I'll do it in the next time when I see him. So that's why this question-answer business between Guru and the disciple is not like this. Guru should know that the disciple's questions is based on what? Is it due to his impurity in the mind or is it due to his false ego? If it's coming from false ego, you have to curb it at that point. Only a Guru can find that out. And that is the duty of the Guru. To make sure. So, it so happened in the past, you will see throughout the history, in the time of the sages, some disciples went to learn from them, Shastram. And they were told, stay here for a few years. You will see in the Upanishads many stories like this. Somebody goes to study the Shastram. So, the sage tells him, look after the cows now first. And he gives a set of cows, many cows to him to look after. He said, I will call you when the time is right. Many, many years he was looking after the cows before he came to realize the cows teaches him what is how to inquire for the truth. Because if you go with false ego inside, so much false ego which we all have inside, and we make our inquiries with that understanding, this spiritual truth cannot come. It is not possible. This is the difficulty. In case of Lord Buddha, this story is very prominent. That somebody came to Lord Buddha and asked some questions to Buddha. Buddha told him that stay with me for a year and then you will get the answer. He said, takes time, you can stay with me for a year, he said. In the meanwhile, after a few days, somebody else came. So he said, he wanted to ask another question to Buddha. So he had to go through this first disciple. The first disciple tells him that you better ask the question now, because I've also come here with a question like this and I've been here now last 20 years. So if you're going to ask question, better ask him now. Because if you are told that you have to wait, it could be a long waiting, he said. He jokingly said like this, because the reason is this. After 20 years, that question has gone from the mind. Why? His false ego has disappeared by then. This is what association does. Association does this. That if you associate with self-realized souls or devotees of that nature, automatically false ego will go and all these doubts will go about this world. Who created this world? What will happen to this world? When will the war happen? And when will the credit crunch will go? All these doubts will go from the mind. We are asking all these questions. Why? Because of the false ego inside. Ahankaram. That because I still thinking I have to control this world, my life in this world. I have to make sure everything is organized properly. I've set up my pension properly. Everything is working very, very well for me. This is all my false ego. So in the same way, Krishna is saying here that the gunanu srijade, what does he say? Gunanu srijandi karmani guno anusrijade gunan. Jivastu gudasam yukto bhunte karma bhalanyasau. Uddhava, there is nothing in this world very special happening. Bhunte karma bhalanyasau. His own karma he is eating and enjoying and suffering according to that. So come out of this situation. We'll discuss next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.